And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight is an exciting night because I get one of my favorite guests back. And we have, I don't know, something about Tom who makes it very fascinating. I think it's because we come from two completely different worlds. And as a result, as we find that even though we come from completely different worlds, somehow it all comes together and it's always about love. So, and I think it's just fascinating. So I'm really excited to have Thomas Campbell back. And welcome, Tom.
Oh, well, it's glad to be here, Lori. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, now you don't sound very loud at all. Let's work on that a bit. Okay. So, we've done a couple interviews, and we've talked a lot about a lot of different topics. One of the areas that I wanted to talk about tonight...
And Lori,
and you, can you hear me at all?
Your sound is kind of drifting away now. You don't sound very loud at all.
I know. That's pretty funny. We thought we got this problem all solved. Okay. So, how's that?
I can... Barely hear you.
Barely hear me.
Much less than I could before.
Not quite sure what happened because we had a good, it was going okay. Let's see. Okay. Is that better?
No, still about
still
a half
pretty
of,
locked,
to a third
soft,
volume that we had when we first started.
That's weird because it's actually gotten better, not worse. Maybe because I... I'm not quite sure here what's going on because it was nice and clear.
Oh.
Better?
Yes, much
okay.
Better now.
Oh, beautiful. All right, I think I know what happened there. Anyway, we have done a little bit of talking about different areas. I wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that we have, again, coming from different worlds, I feel like, you know, where you come from and the metaphysical world is slightly different, and everything you call are metaphors. So I'd like to talk about how we sort of connect in with angels and guides, and we receive this information, and although it's all part of the consciousness and it's really the metaphor that we've created to assist us, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that.
Okay. I'm not sure where your listeners are as far as understanding the larger consciousness system, but let me give just a few moments to that. And consciousness is the fundamental reality. Consciousness is the only thing that is fundamental. Okay, and we are consciousness. We're not physical bodies imagining we're conscious. We're consciousness imagining we have physical bodies.
Yeah.
Now, the consciousness system is an evolving system. It's evolving toward love. And, of course, in my books, I'm a scientist, so I can't help make this sound a little more technical, but it's evolving toward lower states of entropy. That means greater organization, more powerful, more capable. And as it turns out, that is the same as love when it comes to consciousness. So consciousness is evolving toward love. And we are a part of that consciousness. So you've heard the, you know, we're all one. Well, that's true. We're all one with consciousness. And as a part of that consciousness, we are also evolving by lowering our entropy, by becoming love. That's our job here. That's what we're supposed to be about in this virtual reality simulator we call our physical reality. So the system is evolving. We're part of that strategy of evolution, because as we evolve, it evolves, because we're it and it's us. So we're part of how it evolves. So it is very much interested in helping us evolve. It's not just a kind of an idle bystander watching us and see how we do. You know, we're it, it's us, and it wants us to succeed at evolving in this entropy reduction love-encouraging simulator that we're in, which is what our reality is. So when we talk about guides or angels or spirits or those things that help us along our way, or even our intuition, basically those things are our interface to the larger consciousness system. And the larger consciousness system, of course, is all there is to interface with. So we have these interfaces with the system, and the system helps us succeed in evolving. So when we talk about a guide, that guide just kind of bubbles up out of the system and interacts with us. But that doesn't mean that that interface isn't consistent, that it doesn't have a sense of humor, you know, that it doesn't communicate us it's a separate being. It's not separate any more than we're separate. We're not separate either. So this is just our interface. And, of course, because we have to interpret the data we receive, we interpret it to be sort of like us. So here's a guide, and it's a being, and it's interacting with us just like we would interact with another person, except this guide person is smarter than we are and has a bigger picture. But that's just our metaphor for our interface with the larger consciousness system. Okay? Did that make sense, Lori?
It does make sense, and I find it, when I think about it, it's part of, obviously, the non-physical, and it's just our way of relating so that we can try and understand the world, the consciousness that we're moving towards in a better way. Is that really what they're all there for?
Well, yes, we're all evolving. This whole system is evolving, all of consciousness, and there's really only two choices. Logically, you would say there were three. You can either evolve, which is grow toward love. You can devolve, which is to grow toward fear. Or you can stay the same. Mm. And in any large, complex, interactive system, staying the same is not an option. So it's either evolve or die. So we're part of this large consciousness system, and it has to evolve or die. And we're part of that process. And yes, we're connected to it, and it to us. We're all kind of in this thing together. So the larger system is helpful to us. It sets up this nifty little virtual reality that we call our physical universe that we get to come to interact with other people in, because that helps us evolve by making good choices. It's all about your intent. It's not so much what you do as it is the intent that you have in doing it. So we're in this reality frame where we interact with other people and things and events. And how do we approach that? Do we approach it with love? Do we approach it with caring? Or is it all about us and whether or not we get, you know, as much as we can get? So those are the kinds of things that help us evolve our consciousness toward love, which helps the whole system evolve. So, yes, it's just a natural, thing going on.
Right. And so the clearer we are, which is what in... from the metaphysical perspective, you know, we want to become clear, we want to be as open as possible so that we can receive this guidance, so that we can hear and not have the filters that we usually have on, and usually they're the filters of fear, or they're, you know, the filters of our ego that are limiting the information that we receive. And so from my perspective, and probably from the people that typically listen to the show, it's really about, you know, getting yourself out of the way, learning how to surrender, learning to allow, you know, that consciousness data that we're trying to connect with, whether we call it intuition, whether we call it, you know, our spirit guides or our higher self or whatever it is that we call it. But it's really about trying to get ourselves clear so that we can connect.
Well, that's correct. That's our growth path, is to first we have to understand that we are consciousness.
Right.
And then we have to understand that, you know, love is what we need to become. And then we have to understand that it's not about this physical reality. And, you know, it's something bigger than that. It's consciousness, not physical reality. Physical reality is just a virtual reality. It's just data that we get. And then, of course, logically, that leads you to the point of, well, how do I become love? You know, what do I do? How do I connect with this larger consciousness system? How do I evolve and do my part? And then that's all the things that you said. Yes, you have to become clear. It's not a matter of what you, let's put it this way. It's not so much that you have to go out and learn a technique or learn something new to access and to become aware of yourself as consciousness. It's that you have to stop doing the things that block you from that awareness.
Right.
So it's all about not doing, not about doing. It's about getting rid of fear. It's about getting rid of expectations and ego and all of those things which are very high entropy and kind of block your access. You know, sometimes people relate my roots without a body because I first learned about the larger consciousness from Bob Monroe.
Right.
I spent a decade with Bob doing research. But, you know, out of body is not the key. You're not trying to get out of your body. You're already consciousness. Consciousness is not about a body. What you need to do is get into your consciousness, not out of your body. You know, it's not body-centered at all.
Right. And as you say in some of what I've read, I mean, we have, like, every reality is equally a reality. It's just that because we're on this third dimensional planet, this physical reality that we call a body, that we, of what we see with our eyes and hear with our ears and feel with our senses, is the reality we've chosen to sort of fast track into this understanding consciousness. But our sleep reality and the non-physical reality are just, they're just as much a virtual reality as the reality we're in physically.
Yes, that's exactly right. The only thing that's fundamental is consciousness. All these other reality frames are virtual. This mm-hmm. physical universe is a virtual reality. A virtual reality means it's just data. We're consciousness, and we get this information, and we interpret this information to be a reality frame. So we're getting all the information that we would, you know, that we get through our senses. All that sense data that we get that defines our reality, that's just data that's coming to us as consciousness, and we interpret it as this physical reality. When we're in the dream reality, we're into a different data stream, and we interpret that differently. This reality, our physical reality, you know, is bound by a rule set, the way the virtual reality is run, and that rule set is our science, it's our physics. When you're in a dream reality, the rule set's different. There you can fly, there you can teleport. That's harder to do in this physical reality. But besides those two, there's lots of other realities. The reality where Uncle Fred goes when he dies and where we'll end up right after passing on is a special reality frame designed just to help transitions and to help people reevaluate, make their plans, and get back into the game to, you know, keep evolving. It's a special frame for that. And there are lots of other frames. I break the reality frames into two kinds. The kinds that are very constrained, which are like this one, this physical reality, and they have various versions of, you know, a very physical, you know, reality. And then there's those that are not constrained as much. The rule set is looser. That's what I mean by constrained. The rule set's not as tight. And those are more like the dream reality and the reality where you'll in process after you leave this reality. And there are many, there are hundreds of these reality frames, and you just have to switch your data stream to get to them. It's just a matter of intent, understanding, you know, where they are and intend to go to particular ones, and you can go to these various reality frames. It's not nearly as hard as it sounds.
Right. And that's where you get the out-of-body experiences from, is that you can set your intention and you go to these different realities and you can experience them.
Yes, that's right. And that was kind of a launching point for me, but then I soon realized that the out-of-body is just at least the way most people interpret out-of-body. You know, that's just a one small reality frame. And that's not the end. You know, it's just a small reality frame, and it depends a great deal on what you bring to it. You're still getting data, and you still have to interpret it. And because you are leaving from this virtual reality, you have to interpret it in terms of this virtual reality. So we all kind of see and hear different things, but we're getting often the same data, but we have different interpretations. But out-of-body is doing any of these things, the out-of-body, the seeing the auras, the, you know, moving around to different reality frames, you know, that is available to a loving consciousness. That's available to a low-entropy consciousness. It's not something that you have to work particularly hard for. You do have to put some effort to learn the skills, but mostly, that's all available to any consciousness. Anybody can do these things. They just have to stop doing the stuff that blocks them. But I guess one point I'd like to make is that out-of-body and other paranormal things are not necessary to grow up. They're not necessary to evolve your consciousness. It's about love. It's not about going out of body, and it's not about learning to go into other reality frames. Mm-hmm. It's about changing yourself at the being level and become a being of love. That's the key purpose here. And these other things are just things that kind of come to you on the side as you meet the fundamental purpose of becoming love.
Right. And so setting intention is really key. What, I mean, the intention obviously is to become love or to evolve or however you want to frame that. But, you know, obviously our fears and getting connected in with, you know, the collective unconscious that seems to be quite prevalent at certain times of our lives. And it's certainly right now, it, you know, so focused on the financial aspects of the world that's, you know, where a lot of people's fear is. Now, maybe right now we're focused on the Olympics. I don't know. Being in Canada, we're kind of a little bit, but, you know, it seems that setting our intentions, being very clear about where we're wanting to go and how we're wanting to get there, and then, you know, having the courage to face our fears and to remove those blocks. I mean, it always sounds so easy, but it's not. And maybe it is easy. Maybe we make too much of it. Maybe it's because we hold on to the, you know, the things that make us struggle so much.
Yes, I think you're right there. Of course, the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is fear. And fear is the big problem. The ego is generated out of fear. Fear is the big problem. You know, fear of not being lovable, fear of not being adequate, fear of not knowing, not succeeding, you know, doing the wrong thing, not doing it fast enough, not growing, you know, all these fears get in our way. And the only way I know to really get over fear is there's a couple of steps. One of them, you have to understand what the fear is. And that's not easy. Most of us have fears that are buried that we have no idea that we have. You know, these are things that come up with our cultural beliefs, things that are kind of down at the bone and sinew level. They're not really intellectual. So first you have to find out what are these fears. And then as you uncover the fears, the only way to get past the fear is to have the courage to face it and deal with it. Because there's 100 different clever ways that you can escape the fear, but it's only temporary if you don't actually deal with it. So, though you know, many people make a living on helping other people, you know, shove that fear under a rug so they can get on with their life. But that's not really the solution. You need to face it and then let it go. And the way you face it, I've found, is to give it its best shot. In other words, you need to accept the worst. Think of that fear. What is it that's causing the fear? And say, okay, I accept that. If the worst happens, I'll accept it. And after you've done that, then you can just let it go and go on because you've accepted the worst. So that's the thing. And of course, that takes courage, and it's easy to say but hard to do. But yes, that if you want to become love and you want to grow up and you want to have these, you know, paranormal experiences that sound like a lot of fun, then you need to let go of that fear. The fear will be the thing that blocks you. Many, many people tell me, I got out of body once, but as soon as I got out, there was this big monster, you know, and I was frightened and I came back. Or on the way out of body, I got in this paralysis state and it scared me to death, so I came back. All of that is the person's own fear that they're experiencing. And the system tries not to let you into that reality frame until you have gotten rid of enough fear that you can deal well in it. So in a way, you don't get to go unless you're ready.
Mm-hmm. But fear is one of those areas that is really, you know, the challenge. And as you say, a lot of times, I think it's part of the collective unconscious. I think we come here, you know, there are cultural fears, there are fears that are part of, you know, the community you live in or the lineage that you're part of. And then, I mean, there's just so many sometimes that we aren't aware of, as you say. And it's one of those, you know, how do you deal with the things that you're not even aware of?
Well, you know, as you start your process and try to evolve the quality of your consciousness, you'll run into blocks sometimes. You just can't seem to get going. Can't seem to get started. You've gotten a certain distance and you can't seem to take the next step. Well, start looking for a fear. That's one way that you know that you have a fear, because there will be something there that's blocking you. You know, sometimes people think, well, I'm just being overlooked. Look, I'm ready. I'm ready to go do this stuff, and it just doesn't happen for me. If you're ready, if you really are ready, it happens for you. So if you're running into a block, it's because you're not as ready as you think. You intellectually may be ready. I have run into lots of people that intellectually just love to do out-of-body and this sort of thing. It's just what they really, really want to do. But they're not ready. They're not grown enough. They're not ready to deal with it because they have these fears. So that's one way that you know that you're having a fear problem, is what's blocking you. And then you have to start looking for the fear. What is it? Sometimes without a body, they're afraid they won't come back, or afraid that something will get them or happen to them, or happen to their body while they're gone, and they have all of these kinds of fears. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just fear that, oh, it's impossible. You know, this isn't going to work, or I can't do it. Only special people can do this. You know, there's all kinds of fears. Yeah. And you just have to isolate them, find them as you evolve. That's part of your task, is just to dig these out, find them, and get rid of them.
Yeah, and I think you said something really key about, you know, there's a lot of people out there, as you say, that are helping people sort of not deal with them, to distract themselves, or to, you know, go into a different addiction, or, you know, just to bypass, to do a spiritual bypass where they're not dealing with those issues that they need to, and they think that they're dealing with them, and they think that they're, you know, in a really high state because, you know, they're not even in touch with their body, but they're, you know, up, you know, everything is above the heart and they're up in the ethers, and that's kind of where they hang out because they're not really dealing with the things that they need to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, that's a trap, you might say, that many of us get into, and that is if you think that these phenomena or that, you know, an ability to, you know, visit past lives or all these kinds of things, even if it's, you know, read palms or you know, tarot cards or astrology, you think that if you kind of develop one of these skills, that somehow is going to, you know, make you more spiritual. Well, that's not what being more spiritual is about. It's about love. It's about changing who you are at the being level. And you can learn these skills, and you can practice and practice at them, and you can get good. But if you focus on that, if the skill is what you're trying to do, and that's where your intent is, and that's where your focus is, that's a trap, because you'll never get beyond it. Yes, you may get good at a particular skill, you know, but you are not going to rise much above that because you're focused on the wrong thing. You should be focused on changes in yourself, on becoming love, not on, you know, how well you can cast horoscopes or how, you know, much fun it is to go back into time and look at past lives and that kind of thing. We tend to get trapped by our own egos into thinking that what we're doing is really cool or really important or really spiritual, and then our growth slows down or stops.
That's a pretty profound thing that you just said about that, because I think, you know, that's it. A lot of people are focusing on, you know, their skills, or focusing on what they think, you know, is their purpose and what they believe they're here to do. And they're focusing and trying to get really good at it and believing that if they do that, then they'll come into a state of love. And really what you're saying is, you know, go for the state of love, and your gifts and everything will come with it.
Absolutely. Once you Once you evolve the quality of your consciousness, working toward becoming love, all the rest of these things just kind of fall in. You don't have to pursue them. They're just there for the, you know, for the taking, if you will. All you have to do is give them a little bit of your attention, learn just a few things, and that works. You don't have to, you don't have to labor at it or even practice very much. It's just a matter of growing up. See, these things, these phenomena that we call them, and the things that often people get into, those are just part of what you can do as consciousness. Those are just qualities of consciousness. Like a quality of having a physical body is that you can walk and talk and you have arms and you can move around. And everybody with a physical body can do those kinds of things. It's not like you have to be special. Now, you can practice to where you get really good at, you know, something like running or throwing a javelin or ice skating or some kind of thing. You can work and work and work at it. But basically, everybody has the skills of locomotion and moving and walking and talking and those kinds of things. And it's the same with consciousness. If once you're conscious, once you're aware of your consciousness, everybody has these skills. Everybody has the ability to, get into these databases and go forward and backward in time and that kind of stuff. That's just natural being consciousness. That's not what it's about. What it's about is growing up, becoming aware of consciousness, and being able to become operational within that consciousness. And you do that by becoming love. So, you know, not get the horse, you know, in front of the cart. The horse, the thing that actually is moving this thing along, is your intent in evolving toward love. The rest of it, the phenomena and the neat things that can be done, that's the cart. And it just automatically follows the horse.
Right. And you talk about us being very relationship-centered. So where we learn and grow the most is often through our relationships.
Yes, relationships are what challenge us the most.
Yeah.
It's the other people that challenge us the most. And, you know, this is an important point, actually, because sometimes when people kind of try their spiritual growth and they get into meditation, they occasionally get more and more insular. You know, they kind of see themselves as kind of above the others because they meditate and they get into the states of point consciousness and they can do this and they can do that. And that is, again, that's another trap. That's another place where the ego takes you. What's important are all the hundreds of little tiny choices you get to make every day in this physical reality. That's where the rubber meets the road. And that has to do with an expression of the quality of your being. That's how you make those choices. So when somebody, bumps you in a crowd, does that make you angry? You know, when somebody cuts you off in a car and gives you the finger and all that sort of thing because you're driving too slow or too fast or whatever, you know, does that make you want to get back and get even and fix them? Or, you know, does it upset you? You know, or do you deal gracefully, you know, with that sort of thing? Do you deal gracefully with uncertainty? Do you give love back instead of, you know, annoyance for annoyance? Those are the things that are really important. That's kind of the reason why we're here.
And to see the mirror so that we can keep looking not at blaming ourselves, but just at continuously evolving towards love. So the question always becomes, am I acting from a place of love or am I acting from a place of fear?
Yes, and one of the ways you can tell about that is that love is about other. It's about someone else. So if you look at what it is that you're doing and the intent, the motivation you have for doing it, look and see what direction that vector is pointing. Is it about other? Is it about someone else? Or is it about you? The reason you're upset or the reason you're feeling terrific or whatever, is it because you just got something or somebody did something to you? You know, is it about you? Or is it about caring? Is it because somebody else is happy and that makes you happy? Or is it that somebody's doing something that you like and that makes you happy? See, the difference there is it about the other's happiness? Is that what makes you happy? Or is it about what you get? How much fun your life is or how important you think you are. That's how you can tell whether you are, you know, headed the right way or not. Look at all the things you do, all the intents you have. Is it about other? Is it other motivated? or is it about yourself?
Well, that brings up a whole other area, because there's so many people out there that say, you know, you can't love another until you love yourself. So, you know, there's a whole group of people that, and I think that message is correct, but it also makes us a little bit more narcissistic in that we are focusing on, you know, how are you feeling? Like, it's really very much you-centered or me-centered, not
yes,
the other person.
That's kind of an error in interpreting words. This is how you have to take that. You know, on one hand, we say you can't love someone else till you love yourself, and on the other hand, we're saying don't love yourself. You know, that's all about you. You know, that's ego. Get rid of that. Well, there's no real conflict there. You just have to understand what the words mean. When we say love yourself, that doesn't mean give yourself a big hug and kiss the mirror. That's not what that's about. When we say love yourself, we're talking about getting rid of the negative stuff. When we say you have to love yourself, we're really saying that it's about getting rid of the fear, getting rid of the ego, getting rid of the stuff that drags you down. It's cutting loose of the negative. It's not falling in love with yourself and thinking, I'm really great. You know, I'm great, you're great, that sort of thing. It's not about thinking that you're great. It's about not thinking that you're terrible, not thinking that you're inadequate. See, we're back to the same thing. It's about getting rid of fears of not being great, fears of being inadequate. So it boils down to the same thing, getting rid of ego, getting rid of fears. It's not that it makes you love yourself. It actually enables you to love, period. It enables you to love others. It enables you to care. So when you're completely consumed with yourself and it's all about you and your misery and the things that happened to you and, you know, what your boyfriend or girlfriend did to you or the job that, you know, that you didn't get, that's all ego. That's not about, you know, about anybody other than yourself. So there's no inconsistency. Loving yourself is an odd phrase for loving others, for getting rid of the stuff that keeps you from loving at all, the ego, the wants, the needs, the desires, the things that you don't have that you want. That's the thing you get rid of.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's just there's a lot out there that, you know, talk about that in a way that as I hear you talk about it, I know that it's a little bit more narcissistic, and I think that that's, you know, an excellent point of that you're bringing up, because I think it's very true.
Yeah, well, if you take, you know, if you walk up to the mirror and give yourself a big hug, you know, wrap your arms around yourself and then kiss the mirror, that's not on anyone's path to, higher quality consciousness. That's basically going backwards. You know, it's not about you. And as long as it's about you, even if it's about how wonderful you are, that is going backwards. That's not good. It has to be about letting go of the fear, letting go of the ego, and caring about others.
Now, I was reading one of your questions, and it was really about time and the way time sort of, I mean, I think it was talking a lot about the past and whether the past truly exists until it's been observed. And then, you know, it makes you think of the future, and it makes you think of, you know, everything that everybody's been talking about with 2012 and what that's going to mean. And I'd love for you to talk about time from your perspective and your understanding. And because time does feel like it's speeding up right now, and we do feel like we're in a heightened state of evolution or our consciousness, and I'm just wondering what your perspectives are on that.
Okay, well, I think there's a couple of questions there all
there
embedded
were.
In a lump. I'll see if I can't pull those apart. As far as time goes, time is very fundamental to consciousness. It's a fundamental part of consciousness. Yes, there is time, and yes, it's fundamental. Now, the time that we experience here in this reality frame is a special time just for this reality frame. Every reality frame runs on its own clock. So this is a manufactured time, because this is a simulated reality, and in a simulation you have a time loop, and you know, every delta T you increment the simulation one increment of time. So that is our sense of time, and time is not continuous. Time is is discrete. It's digital. It comes in chunks. So every so often, we get another delta T of time, and our simulation moves one step forward. That's kind of the way time works. But time is fundamental. It's a part of consciousness, and our experiences, as far as the past goes, have to do with, you know, the simulation goes on, and the data is saved. Every choice we make, every thought we have, everything we do, all the data is saved, and that becomes the past database of what we did. And then there's all the things we could have done but didn't do, and that's also in a database. All the possibilities that we did not actualize with our free will, and that's in an unactualized database. And then there's all the things that we could do, that we might do yet in the future, and they're all assigned probabilities that we might do them, and that's the future probable database. So here we have the future probable reality. It's not a done deal because we have free will and we can always do something other than what was predicted. But you have that future database and you have the past actualized and unactualized. These databases, in my model, are what the Hindus would call the Akashic Records.
Okay.
It's just all the information that's out there. And you can get around in these databases. You can visit them. And when you visit such a database, you query it with your intent. And what you get back, it's like being in a movie. You know, you can interact with it. You can interact with those beings, past or future. You can do what-if analysis. You can change things and say, how does this change, downstream? All of that is available to you. So you can move in time, and you can move in the past. But it's not like those things exist simultaneously. They don't. They're databases. There's no free will there except yours if you're in there, doing analysis. The other characters are basically probability models, which is what you are. You are data. You're kind of a probability model, and because we are here to evolve, we have free will, and we are right between those databases in the present, and that's where all the action is. That's why it's better to stay focused here than it is to worry about the future or the past, because all the action is in the present. That's where you make choices. That's where you decide, you know, what your intent is and what you're going to do. That's where you grow your love and evolve your consciousness, is in the present. So 2012, mostly that turns out to be just fear-mongering. You know, it doesn't really matter what happens at 2012. If you grow up, you're doing your best to evolve, to become love, then whatever happens, you deal with it. Fear in
start. Okay, so we had a little bit of a problem here. We are going to rejoin this this part of the session with Thomas Campbell back onto the show that got cut off, unfortunately. We had a little bit of a technical problem, but we're still here, and we'll finish the hour interview. Okay, so Tom, we were talking about how time and 2012, and that there's a bit of fear-mongering about that, so.
Yes, and I was just, as we kind of drifted off into outer space there with our signal, I was just mentioning that one of the characteristics of the larger reality and of us as consciousness is that you manifest what you fear. You also manifest the good things, too. You manifest love as well. You tend to create your own reality. So if you have a lot of fear, you tend to create those things that embody that fear. For instance, if you really fear that you're not lovable and that nobody likes you, that will probably make you act in a way that makes you unlovable so that nobody likes you. We manifest those fears. So when it comes to 2012, there's so much fear-mongering going on, all the terrible and awful things, and then there's another bunch of wonderful things, and it's all a little scary. And that's unfortunate because, one, fear is the enemy. Fear is the opposite of love, so it's pulling us in the wrong direction. And two, you know, we're liable to manifest something scary just because we're all afraid of it. So my advice about 2012 is to just work on yourself, work on becoming love, caring about other people, not focused on yourself, and let 2012 take care of itself. It's just not important. It's just not important.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So all of this talk about, I mean, there is positive, a lot of positive things out there about 2012 as well, about how our consciousness is going to a different level, and, you know, the planet's consciousness is going to a different level, and the vibration from the sun is, you know, impacting our consciousness, and that the energy is at a higher level than it's ever been, and it's allowing us again to, you know, to get into this evolution. And maybe this is all ego, and maybe this is all, I don't know.
Well, a couple of comments on that. One, there is no free lunch. You don't get to grow up and become love just because it happens to be 2012. You still have to become it on your own. So there isn't going to be, you know, it's like playing Monopoly. You get $200 just for passing go. Well, life in reality isn't like that. You're not going to get a big boost just because you happen to be here at the right time. You're still going to have to grow up. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, you've heard of the 100th monkey. You've mm-hmm. heard of, you know about group consciousness. Mm-hmm. When you have a group together, they can pull each other up to some extent. And what they're really doing, it's not that they're forcing you to grow up. What they're doing is giving you opportunities. It makes it easier because you're in an environment that's growing. It's the opposite, you know, the mob group mind, where you have a bunch of people doing bad things, you know, in a mob. They pull each other down, so where you end up with a mob behavior that's like the lowest common denominator of the individuals in the mob. Those people in the mob are doing things that are terrible, more terrible than they would do by themselves, because the mob psychology pulls them down. Well, you can get the same thing on the positive end. If you're with people who are growing and becoming and loving, you tend to be more loving and caring in that environment. So it is true that you can grow a lot faster if you're in a loving, growing environment, but you still have to do the growing. Just because you're in that environment doesn't make you more spiritual, doesn't make you, a higher quality of consciousness. Just like you can hang out with a great guru who is an embodiment of love, but if you don't grow up, you're just hanging out with a great guru. It's not going to affect you if you don't grab hold of the opportunity and make it your own. So there's no free lunch. We're not all going to get a $200, you know, boost in our spiritual quality just because we passed 2012. It won't be that easy. There may be opportunity that we can grab, and the opportunity will be there for everyone. Sometimes even the positive have its negative side. Oh, it'll be a great opportunity if you're ready, you know. And the if you're ready is the fear inducer. So it's just, don't worry about it, and we will interact with it. We will do what we do, and make what of it as we can. And that's it. If you want to be able to make as much of anything, whether it's 2012 or whether it's tomorrow or whatever, you need to become love, raise the quality of your consciousness, let go of your entropy, get rid of fear, get rid of ego. So it's the same prescription. What do you do to get ready for 2012? The same thing you do to get ready for tomorrow or for the rest of your life. So why make it special?
That's a good point. It's a good point. And I also like what you said about the groups, because, you know, I know we all know that how much more power there is in a group, but then, you know, then there becomes the group leader, and the group leader tends to take more of that power, and somehow it gets all messed up. And, you know, our intentions and what we're looking for is pure, and then something happens that, you know, the dynamics of the group, unless they're all coming from the same place, just like you said about the guru, yeah.
Yeah, well, ego asserts itself as the problem.
Yeah.
When somebody sees that they have an opportunity to kind of be special or to be the leader or whatever, and ego tends to assert itself. Wherever you have an organization, you generally have ego. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the nature of organizations. Typically, that's it. Otherwise, you just have a collection of individuals. You know, a collection of individuals isn't necessarily, you know, so ego-bound. Now, that can have ego in it, too, but it doesn't have to. When, as soon as we get organized and give ourselves a name and, you know, go out on a membership drive, suddenly all the things that used to be important are no longer important, and it becomes a kind of an ego-driven thing. You know, a lot of religions went that way. They had some great spiritual people. You know, they had good ideas. It was all about love and giving and growing up. And then eventually it's about membership drives and, you know, who is and who isn't, and the people that agree with you and the awful people that don't. And then it becomes an ego exercise. So you have to be on the lookout for exactly, you know, if you join groups, you have to understand just what this group's about. Not necessarily what the words are, but what's going on.
Right. Yeah, it's great. Now, I don't know if you've seen the movie Avatar, but it makes me think of the consciousness because it was all about... Were you able to see the movie? Avatar?
Say that again. I just couldn't hear you.
Oh, have you seen the movie Avatar?
No, I have not
okay.
seen the movie Avatar.
So Avatar, just because it's very relevant in talking about consciousness, and I would recommend going to see it, but it's a movie where... Okay, so it's a movie where Earth is raping this planet that is all very connected, and, you know, the trees are sacred, and these beings are able to connect in with the tree, and all the animals are sacred, and the beings are able to connect, and they actually make a physical connection through what looks like something coming out of their head, and that it actually intertwines, and they're able to connect through the trees, as I said, through animals, through each other, and the humans, of course, are coming, and they created a simulated body that would match them so that they could try and integrate. Really what they were coming for was to try and rape their planet of certain minerals that Earth needed or whatever. And in the end, it became, you know, a fight between Earth and this planet, and how the people that were becoming very connected with these other alien beings were wanting to, allow them to keep, you know, their planet the way it is, and allow them to connect in with the consciousness of this planet. And it makes me think again of how the Earth has been stripped and raped of all of its, you know, nutrients. I mean, we're always thinking about us and our greed, and we're not thinking about the planet as a whole and as its own sentient being, and how we, you know, are all connected to everything. We're connected to the water and the trees and the animals and each other, and we tend to lose that. We tend to just be concentrated and focused on us. Even the people on the spiritual path it's really about, you know, evolving us, and we're forgetting the sentience of the planet. We're forgetting everything about the planet.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, when we talk about love and becoming love, that's not just in relation to other humans, you know. That's, mm-hmm. When I talk about love, it's not that limited. It's everything. You know, this is an all-encompassing kind of love that I'm talking about. It's not, you know, just, again, it's about other. It's about what's out there. It's the whole. It's all. So that's, you're right on that part. It's not just, because anything else is really nearsighted. Anything else is really back, I guess, about you again. You know, it's you have to have the long view. It's not about what works tomorrow. It's what's sustainable and what is right in the big picture, mm-hmm. and the big view. That's the kind of love that you need to learn to be.
Mm-hmm. But how have we forgotten that everything? I mean, we know in some sense that we're all connected, but how have we forgotten that, you know, the Earth is a sentient being, and the trees have consciousness, and, you know, everything has consciousness? Like, how have we gotten to this place where we think it's just about us, and we're, you know, we are taking?
Well, how do we get there? What you find in this reality frame, and I have to point out that this reality frame that we're all here learning and growing and evolving in, this is not a graduate school. It's not even a high school. It's a nursery school. You have a lot of very young consciousness learning to be and to become love. So, you know, how do we get here? Well, it's because what you find here is really who we are. When you read the, you know, when you look at the news and you go outside and, you know, and see the people, you see the fear, you see the hate, you see, you know, the greed, the selfishness, and the, you know, the climbing the ladder and getting ahead based on taking advantage of other people and so on and so on. That's because that's the way we are. That is an accurate representation of humanity on this planet at this time. That's us. It's not like, you know, we're really different and that's not us at all. That is us as a whole. So if you look at humanity as a group, as a single group, then what you see is what you get. That's what we are. And we have a long way to go. A lot to learn, a lot of love to add to our lives that's not there now. But that's why it's like that. Why do we forget? Well, because we haven't evolved. We haven't grown that much to become aware of things outside of our own needs and wants, outside of our own ego, because we're bound by that fear, we're bound by that ego, and that's how we operate. So this world we live in, which is, you know, a pretty rough place to be, and definitely does not run on love yet, you know, this is us. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, it's the truth. It's like you're just looking in at your own self in the mirror when you look at humanity. You know, now of course there are humans that rise above that and that are growing and spiritual and that sort of thing, but that's not the norm. This is an elementary school or even a preschool, and what you see is what we are.
But did we devolve? Like, did we somehow devolve to get to this place? Because it couldn't have always been like this, or was it?
No, we have evolved. We are... humanity as a group is probably more evolved now than it was, you know, a couple of thousand years ago in general.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that, you know, that doesn't mean that there weren't very evolved people then. Look at Lao Tzu, who started Taoism.
Right.
Wrote the Tao Te Ching. You know, obviously, he was a very evolved, very, you know, loving individual. He understood reality very well. But that was one individual. Basically, times are better. We tend to not be quite as rough and crude as we were. Yes, as a whole, as a species, we are growing. We are becoming. It just is a very, very agonizingly slow process because it has to be at an individual level. There's nothing you can do to make all of us jump up at a higher level altogether. It's just the sum of all the individuals here. That's where our average comes from.
Right. It's interesting.
So if you want to raise that average and you want to, want to improve this place, then the only thing that you can do is improve yourself and make it easier for other people to improve themselves. And you do that by caring, by giving, by helping.
Mm-hmm. So service to others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then, you know, asking yourself, you know, are you doing something out of fear or are you doing it out of love?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you can't tell just by the action. Just because you're, you know, you're working in a soup kitchen for the benefit of the poor doesn't necessarily mean you're doing that out of love. There is all sorts of other reasons that people do good deeds, like, you know, their image and, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're just going through the motions. You really have to look at the intent, not the deed. Not what you do, but why you do it. That's the key.
Well, yeah, because we were taught as children that, you know, that we weren't lovable and acceptable as we are. So we had to try and be someone that we're not to be lovable, to be loved.
Right, and that's that fear stuff we were talking about that one needs to get rid of. And that's what the loving yourself refers to, is getting rid of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. But those masks that we wear, they're... you know, they're tough ones to know whether they're masks or not. They're not always evident why we do things.
That's right. Those masks are made out of ego. They're made out of fear. And that most of that fear is totally invisible to us, to our intellect. We don't realize what forces kind of push us and control us.
Mm-hmm. And so you talk again about being open-minded and open-minded skepticism and living gracefully. And so I guess as we go through this, to what? To question everything we do?
Well, yes. The only way you can kind of progress in this reality we are is through open-minded skepticism. You have to be open-minded. Otherwise, if you're not, you can't grow. You can't learn anything because you believe you know it all already. You know, I know quite a few people fit into that category. If you're not skeptical, you'll never know whether you're heading down the right path or whether you're just kidding yourself. You know, are you doing this? You know, what's the point? Where are you going? How effective is it? How much are you changing? You have to stay skeptical. Everything you learn, if you're doing paranormal things, you have to figure out whether it's your imagination, you know, that going back and look at that past life, is that your imagination or is that real? And you have to collect data, do things that you can do so that you can tell the difference. So skepticism is important. That's what keeps you straight and focused. Being open-minded is important because that's what allows you to learn. And one of the big things you have to learn in order to be skeptical and open is you have to learn to live gracefully with uncertainty. See, most of us, when faced with uncertainty, grab hold of a belief because that is certain then. That makes us feel more secure because now we know. But in general, there's lots of things you don't know, and they're just probable. You'll have a hypothesis about them. You think they might be true, but until you actually gather the data to know that they're true, they should just be an hypothesis, you know, a probability, a possibility of some, you know, maybe highly probable, maybe not so probable, but just let them be uncertain. We don't have to jump to beliefs to make ourselves feel better. We need to learn to live gracefully with uncertainty. Then we can be open-minded and skeptical and grow.
Right. So people that feel that they have this claircognizance, which, you know, I felt that when you know, you feel that you know something is true and everything seems to align in your body. I mean, that is a form of our intuition. It's a form of some sort of knowing, but in some senses, I guess we could feel that that's truth, but it may only be truth for us, or it
yes.
may not be truth for us at all.
Exactly right. We all live in our own reality. You know, all 6 billion of us, we all have our own little realities. Now, this is a multiplayer game, so we all interact. But we all actually live in our own reality, and we all have to find our own truth. If, you know, like if I tell you something about, you know, how it is in the out-of-body state or this or that, if you don't know, then you only have two choices. You can believe me or you can disbelieve me. But neither one of those choices is going to help you grow up. Neither one of those choices is going to help you become a more loving person. So whether you believe it or not believe it is irrelevant. Go find out. Make it your own experience. Learn. Grow.
Right. Right. That's what you have to do with everything. Everything that you want to understand, you have to experience it yourself.
Absolutely. You have to do it yourself. There's nobody, there's no book, there's no guru, there's nobody else can help you grow up. You have to do it yourself. And if you are pursuing belief, well, I just want to know, you know, what to believe, you know. Tell me what's true, and then I'll believe it, and then I'll be okay. That's false. It's not like that. It's not about your intellect understanding something. It's about you being something. And intellectual understanding doesn't create a change in your being. That's something you have to do to grow up, and only you can do it. And the truth has to be your own truth, not somebody else's.
And so all the times when we hear, you know, people say things and we want to believe them, and then something will happen and it'll remind us that, you know, oh, we've got to get this ourselves. Like, that's really what this has all been about. It is really truly about us getting it ourselves and not, you know, just blindly trusting or believing or having faith.
Yes, that's exactly right. Again, nobody can make you or force you to grow up. Now, they can help you grow up, but they help you grow up just by giving you opportunities to do it yourself. That's the only thing. By giving another person support, by caring, by giving them love, you put them in a space where they feel safe to grow. So you can help another by offering them an environment that is conducive or facilitates their growth, but you can't, you know, help another person make that decision, change that intent, become different than they are. They have to do that from the inside. So all of this is personal. Consciousness is personal.
Hmm. Wow. Well, I think this has been a great show, Tom. I hope we don't take as long this next time to get you back, but this has been a great show, even though we did have a minor blip in there that hopefully we'll get put together quickly and we'll have the show up for people to listen to shortly. But thank you very much. This has been...
You're quite welcome, Lori. It's always my pleasure. I always enjoy talking with you. You know, you started this saying how different we were and how we come from totally different viewpoints, but... It seems like we kind of agree almost on everything. I don't know so how different we are. It's just I'm a scientist, and I arrived at all of this through logic and science, and you've arrived at the same thing through your own path, but you know there's only just one truth.
Yeah.
And there's a thousand different paths and ways to get to that truth.
That's right. That's fascinating. The blessing of this world. Well, thank you very much, Tom.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.